Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday the 19th of October, recording at 9:22 p.m. And yes, it's still British summertime. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, a quick review of the week. Now, it's been a lively one in some respects. In Asian stock markets, they've been generally steady. And that includes China, and the ASEAN sector has been very much to the fore. One of the weaker markets has been Korea, but a partial reason for that is the very, very strong Korean won that we've seen. Actually, the Asian currencies have been pretty strong generally, yen accepted. Recently. Now, in the European stock markets, we had a decent rally for the first 3 days of the week. And we saw, for instance, the European Banks Index rally back up to its high of a few weeks ago, and then back off in here today. But modest gain, modest declines rather, today here in the European markets, although they may be a little bit bigger on Monday. In the Americas, we had quite a big sell-off, and the corporate profit news disappointed. That's been a bit of a trend, and markets have been levitating despite that. And so we've seen some sharpish declines in here today. Wall Street, Dow down 1.5%, S&P back down to 1433, down 1.66%, NASDAQ down over 2%. Now, long-dated government bond prices had been quite soft in the first 3 days of the week, and then have rallied here. Most of the rally came here today, so they regained part of those losses. In currencies, the dollar has been soft generally, but was a little firmer yesterday, and that continued here today. For instance, the euro slipped back to 130.24. Sterling is just about 160 even, down a little bit. And the Aussie down to 103.27. Asian dollar index, which had rallied, has been rallying for months, got back up to a previous high and has paused. In precious metals, well, it's been one of fairly persistent selling pressure here, particularly today. And we've seen some sharp declines. Palladium down, no, they're still trading after hours, but palladium down $21 to $6.26, silver down 78 cents to $32.08, the gold price down $19 and change to $17.22. Platinum down $22, $16.21, nearly $22. Industrial metals, which had been firm early in the week, were clipped in here today, and included copper down a big 11.45 cents, bringing it back to $3.62.85. Grains and beans have been firmer this week. Today's, they were also up modestly. Sugar and coffee were to the plus side. More, many of the other soft commodities are a little easier. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, we could really say that this is in no small part the QE story, because we've got the, well, as is well known, we've got the QE infinity coming from the Fed. We've got QE apparently infinity coming from the Bank of England. We have the ECB coming on strongly with its own version of QE. And we've got the Bank of Japan talking about its own QE, although there's some resistance there, once again, from the governor of the Bank of Japan. But he doesn't have all that much time left to his term, another 6 months, just over 6 months. Now, so that's been the tailwind that has helped to lift equity markets considerably. And in doing so, it has compressed valuations a little bit. Now, that's not such a problem for Asia, because Asia had actually lagged behind Wall Street for much of the rally that we've seen this year, despite the ASEAN sector being quite strong and Hong Kong and India coming on very firmly in the last few months. So valuations in Asia have gone from being perhaps a little expensive, say around the beginning of the year, to looking a little bit more attractive now relative to what we see in the United States. And the valuations in Europe, which were the cheapest of all, well, they've come down somewhat. Given the very good rally that we have seen in the European markets, but are still regarded as reasonably attractive. But you have to pick your companies carefully, because you say, where's the growth going to come? If it isn't going to come from Western and Southern Europe, then they're going to have to get the growth from overseas. And well, are they in a position to do that? Well, some are and some aren't. Needless to say, the autonomies are the ones that are in a position to do just that. And that's a sector we have. Now, Wall Street, which has really been a powerful leash, had a powerful leash effect on many stock markets for much of the year, has really stalled up here over the last month and a bit. And I think this is going to continue for a while. Now, one of the reasons for that is that I've often said that it's been the Fuller Money View really since 2000 that we were in a secular, we had entered as of 2000, that big sell-off, entered a cycle of secular valuation contraction. And what I mean by that, of course, is that each time we rally up to the levels that we do, that we have seen recently, that the valuations are a little better than they were a couple of years earlier. They are better still than they were back in 2007 at the same levels, and they're a whole lot better than they were back in 2000. And the reason for that, of course, is because a lot of these companies have improved their governance. And so they've cut overheads. They have been earning often some decent profits, and they have also been increasing dividends, and that all has all of that has helped to improve the valuations. But the recent rally, going back to the beginning of June, when those valuations were quite competitive, what we've seen is a rally back up, or competitive relative to where they are now. We've seen a good strong rally, which has created some valuation expansion. And that has occurred at a time when the earnings are actually experiencing their slowest growth rate or even turning downwards. And that's been the problem here this week. And we saw it yesterday with Google, and we've seen it here today with GE and various tech companies, other tech companies than Google. And that's spooked the markets in here a little bit, so they backed off those highs. And some of the talisman shares like Apple and of course Google, well, they've lost their upside momentum. They're still above their 200-day moving averages. But they are experiencing some mean reversion towards those averages. Then the US market also has all the uncertainty of the election. I know what they're only 18 days now till that election, and it's very closely contested. There's also the fiscal cliff issue to be resolved. So that's all a recipe, in my opinion, for Wall Street to underperform here for a while. Now, I can hear you thinking, define underperform. Now, I've been talking about a ranging reaction, a somewhat bigger and longer reaction. I've been talking about that for over a month in these audios, and that's exactly what we're seeing, although it hasn't been that much deeper, certainly not on the, or it hasn't been deeper on the S&P or the Dow, has been on the NASDAQ. And I think that's probably quite important, because the NASDAQ, among the major indices, was very much the leader overall. But some of the banking sectors had also had very big moves, and probably the best sector in on Wall Street this year was outperforming banks, and outperforming tech was the biotechnology. But they all became quite overextended, and so we're now again in a mean reversion phase here, certainly for that biotechnology sector, and certainly for the technology sector generally. The banks are coming off a much lower base. So that's where we actually see ourselves. Now, those uncertainties are going to be resolved over the next few weeks. I'm hopeful, hoping doesn't mean that it happens, of course, but I'm hoping that Wall Street can get away with no more than a longer ranging reaction and consolidation, and that it doesn't blow up into a full-blown correction. And we saw a moderate correction here starting in about, was it February or March, late February, for Wall Street this year. We saw a bigger one, a considerably bigger one, in 2011, and also a biggish one in 2010. So I'm hopeful, having already seen that correction around the end of the first quarter, that we are less likely to see another one at this stage. But if we do, it's going to be a combination of some of that uncertainty, but I think mainly the earnings, the earnings story, because confidence is obviously going to be a whole lot higher if people are rather awed at some of the record earnings that are coming out. Even if some of the forensic accountants quibble over some of those earnings. But what we've seen in the last many weeks has been a series of lowering of forecasts and estimates and projections from the companies, and then with the results actually coming in at a somewhat lower level still. And that's hit the autonomies as well, because global GDP growth has been slowing overall. Now, why might we get a somewhat bigger correction? Earnings, as I've just said, and then there's also the bugbear of high-frequency algorithmic trading, and that can really sort of churn the markets around as we see all too frequently, and it leads to that banality known as risk on and risk off. And today was most definitely a risk off day. Now, I feel though that so that's I've covered some of the bad news and concerns in there. We still do have that tailwind in terms of monetary policy and low interest. That includes low interest rates, and that's going to remain the case really for quite some time now. And I'm quite optimistic that China is finally going to get its act together. The squabbling over leadership for the next generation, which takes over, is it the 18th of next month? It's right around that time. And I think that they will contribute some economic stimulus of their own, as the outgoing regime been doing on an incremental basis overall, and they've levered China's inflation down rather nicely, although we get some conflicting evidence on that. Isn't that always the case with statistics? I saw not long ago a story saying that, well, pork prices were too high in China, and so that wasn't going to lower their inflation. But the last inflation figures that came out were really quite attractive, whether massaged or real. But I think that economy has slowed down enough so that that will certainly have contributed to the lower inflation. When I say slow down, it's still a growth rate of reported growth rate of over 7%, and it's probably not much lower than all that much lower than that. And in other words, it's a growth rate that the rest of the world would die for. Now, my feeling is that the Asian region is going to take over the leadership here to the upside. Now, Asia, being somewhat higher beta, can still be pulled back if Wall Street has a few more bad days like today. That's that leash effect. Wall Street moving lower would likely pull most other markets down with it. Possibly not the China A shares, which had been serial underperformers during the big Wall Street rally, and have only shown signs of recovery more recently. So if any market uncouples in there, I would expect it to be the China A shares. But overall, I think that we will see and that stronger performance coming from Asia, because as I said earlier on, the valuations there are now among the most attractive. European valuations are more attractive still, but we know the price, but where's the E? Where are the earnings going to come from? The autonomies, they'll do fine. The dividend aristocrats, they'll probably do reasonably well. But the growth that I think will also translate itself into some investor interest, I think it already is likely to be in that greater Asian region. And I think that will include India, provided Prime Minister Singh is able to continue with his sprint for long overdue reforms and efforts to modernize the Indian economy. Let's hope so, at any rate. So that's pretty much how I see it overall. We are still within a cyclical bull market, and I don't see too much on the immediate horizon that's likely to kill it off. The European concerns have subsided. Now, again, we know that their problems, economic problems, are far from resolved, but they're moving in the right direction, and that's what really counts with markets. The U.S., well, a lot may ultimately depend on who wins the election, but it's not all that far off. Let's wait until we get there and go in and analyze that in more detail. Now, what about the long-dated government bonds, which saw prices come down a bit today and yields move up a little bit? And I posted a number of charts. Well, they included the U.S. and gilts and the U.K. gilts and the bunds, and also the JGBs. And they look basey in terms of the yields. And when you look at the very long-term charts, it's really an OMG moment, if you're not familiar with those charts, because they've come down, those yields have come down such a very long way, partly due to the disinflation that we saw for many years, and more recently due to the financial repression that we were seeing and are still seeing. But the bond markets appear to be anticipating something different down the road at some stage, and that could be a combination of inflation pressures, as some feel, Others are more relaxed about that. I'm not. But it could also be that they are starting to anticipate the gradual removal of QE. That could be another factor. And therefore, I do maintain that we are in a gradual bottoming out and base building phase, and that's going to lead to some sort of stronger upward move in those bond yields. Will it come this year, during the remainder of this year? Probably not. Will it come next year? Quite possibly. Will it occur before the end of 2014? Almost inevitably, in my opinion. So I regard those bonds as the last of the great bubbles. Now, maybe other bubbles are going to be forming as we go ahead, but really what we've seen over a number of years is the deflation of a number of bubbles, the bursting of a number of bubbles, and at least partial deflation of them. But that leaves bonds, though, which the Fuller Money view is, as I say, that's the last great bubble out there. And I would not want to be investing in those Western bonds, although there are some people who, riding on the backs quite cleverly of the financial repression and that's all that QE, have done extremely well on a total return basis. And the ones who've leveraged that, the banks have been doing that, have done even better. And that's also been kind of semi-official government policy or central bank policy to reflate those, I beg your pardon, to recapitalize those banks through the yield curves. And they've gone a long way towards achieving that ambition. Now, but the long-term outlook, I maintain, is for lower bond prices, higher long-dated government bond yields. But it's been a long fuse, and it's still, it gets a little shorter, tiny bit shorter every day, of course, but it's still a fairly long fuse. So we may not see any big jump. I don't think we will see any big jump in the yields anytime soon. And take the other side of the coin, I don't think we're likely to see a crisis. I think we're going to hear the term crisis a whole lot less here, or when we do, it's more likely to be applied to some tragic event that's taking place in the Middle East, such as in Syria right now. Okay. Now, what about these precious metals, which had that terrific 4-week run, then got up to those, what I described as those lateral and psychological resistance levels, and they were up near the 700 level for palladium, the $1,700 level for platinum, the $1,800 level for gold, and around that just a little over the $35 level for silver. Well, we've seen them, we saw them stall up there, lose upside momentum. There's a bit of a linkage there with Wall Street due to the high frequency trading, bit of a correlation, I mean. And we saw them, or we've seen them fall back recently. I thought it was starting to look a little bit climactic earlier in the week. I jumped the gun a little bit on that. I think it's hard to gauge those things precisely, but we certainly the action today looks a little bit more climactic, but I can't say it's over. They've come back a good way. I think some of the people who missed the earlier move to the upside, if they're still interested, and I'll wager they are, will be looking at these prices at these levels and thinking, well, just maybe they'll want to see some evidence that these markets are stabilizing in here. The technical signs, if a decline picks up speed, then it is becoming climactic, and if it then loses downside momentum and starts to get some upward dynamics, then you can be reasonably hopeful that they're in a bottom area. And so I would regard this as a partial retracement of those very good gains that we saw not all that long ago from sort of mid-August into sort of first half of September for the precious metals. And I think these big stories here of quantitative easing, the very low interest rates, but quantitative easing is the big one, all that money printing, that is a very, very bullish fundamental backdrop to this precious metals cycle. And I think also that seasonally, this is a period when we're more likely to see firm markets than not. They are volatile. They can be quite volatile. So having surged upwards, we shouldn't be too shocked that they have given up some of those gains fairly quickly this week. But gold is still holding well over the majority of its move to the upside, and I think it will continue to do so. And I maintain that we are in the accumulation phase overall of this ongoing, the latter stages of this, what has been a very big corrective phase following the upward accelerations in precious metal prices that we saw last year. So I think the demand for them will pick up, and probably quite soon. And I expect to see higher levels and above the highs that we've seen in recent weeks. I expect those highs to be taken out probably next month, and we could see some quite worthwhile gains. On a medium-term basis, I'm very bullish. Now, what about some of these other commodities? The industrial metal sector had a lot of short covering a few weeks ago, produced some very good rallies that looked to me as if the lows were in. They've also had some quite big retracements overall, and that suggests that real demand is not all that strong, and that I also think that it's kind of an all eyes on China, although we have to bear in mind that China certainly isn't the only country that's still involved in infrastructure build. And it's, there are very few countries that couldn't do with some infrastructure build. They may not be prioritizing it here right now due to softish growth overall, but I think we're going to see plenty of it. And for these Asian countries, there's that big theme of urbanization that Owen is so often talking about, and I think that's going to continue. I think we see the potential for that reflected in the base building that's taken place in some of the leading miners, and they don't get more leading than BHP in terms of the big diversified miners. And so I think that's really a very interesting sector. And I think that those, as I say, those metal prices will be picking up again. Certainly the better China performs in terms of its stock market, let alone some evidence of economic upticks there, I think that will lead to some speculative demand in the industrial metals, and we could get a good push to the upside. Now, crude oil, I've described crude oil, which is relatively quiet here right now, just down a little bit on the WTI today to 90.15. It's been ranging here overall, and I didn't catch sight of the Brent today, so I'm just bringing that up. And Brent is back down to 110. Now, That's not bad. We still have a premium in there, a risk premium, and the risk that I'm talking about would be supplies from the Middle East. And it would be good to see crude oil move a little bit lower in here overall. And it might well do so, although it's not hard to imagine why we get periodic little surges to the upside. And you've got Syria, you've got the Libyan situation, you've got some unstable conditions in several other Middle Eastern and North African countries, Nigeria. So again, I've often said that we're in the second decade of a relatively tricky period here in terms of oil supplies, energy supplies generally. But that going forward, I think the prices will come down in real terms. They'll probably go up in nominal terms due to inflation, but come down in real terms. And the reason for that is all the shale kicks in. We're not going to get as much nuclear as I think we need, but some of that new build, quite a bit of new build, will be coming on stream from China and some of the other growth economies in terms of nuclear power. We've seen quite an expansion in solar, which is becoming more efficient all the time. We've had too much expansion, I feel, in the windmills, but they are playing a role, contributing energy, although albeit heavily subsidized and relatively inefficient, in my opinion. But I don't want to digress too much in all this, but you see what's happening. We have both the conventional and unconventional oil becoming more readily available thanks to all the technology, including the fracking and the horizontal drilling. And so that's all going to continue. And we're seeing the steady development of renewables and the growth economy, nuclear power that I talked about coming on stream in the next few years. So that bodes well, I think, for the future in terms of the next decade. And I'm not going to make a political point here, but I'll quote accurately in terms of policies, I feel, stated by the candidates. If Governor Romney wins the presidency in the U.S., the U.S. is going to be energy independent before the end of this decade. Now, that's what they want to do. Will he win the presidency? Well, your guess is as good as mine, but he certainly revitalized the campaign, starting with that first debate, and seems to have the momentum here right now. So there we are. What about foods? I didn't talk our currencies. Talk about currencies here a little more. I think where we get the big QE, we're unlikely to, and that's of course the USA, Britain, Europe through the ECB. And increasingly, I think this will be more a story for next year, particularly after the head of the BOJ is changed. We will see more QE coming from Japan. And that's going to keep their currencies relatively soft. The US dollar gets these periodic rallies on short covering and when there are various global scares. We know that. We've seen that, that sort of a knee-jerk reaction. We can expect that. But the dollar is not a fundamentally or technically strong currency in here right now. If you want to see what are the fundamentally strong currencies, go look at the Asian Dollar Index in the library. And look at some of the stronger, more credible individual countries as well. And Singapore, China's currency, really quite firm in here now. The Korean won. Well, there's a good long list. And it makes sense that where we're going to get the best growth, we're going to see the firmest currencies of all. What currency possibly has the chance to weaken the most? Well, that's a bit of a guessing game. I think in terms of what the economy needs, it ought to be Japan. But we'll see. And grains and beans, food price inflation. You probably see it in your supermarkets wherever you live. There are people all over the world listening to this audio. I think we're going to see more of it. And that's a long-term trend. I think we will certainly see it while weather conditions pose a major threat to crops. And we've seen that for, what is it, at least 4 years and counting. And we will also see it as a consequence of QE. So we have to now, we don't have all that much inflation in other areas here, not certainly not all, and certainly not much in wages overall, but we do see it in the cost of most of the things that we actually need. So we sum it all up, and what's that, how does it all look? Well, high yielding equities are very attractive. Equities will also give the growth. They will also have the volatility, greater volatility than the bonds. But in my opinion, they're a whole lot more attractive overall. Precious metals, always best purchased on setbacks, which, and they've been experiencing one here recently. It's a very interesting story there. And of course, within the equity market structure, we'll continue to play the themes as they change and evolve. And it's not at all a bad background in here. It's quite an interesting one, challenging, yes, and thus it always was. But I think there'll be plenty of opportunities for profit if we keep our feet on the grounds, on the ground, metaphorically speaking, and keep reviewing our charts. Meanwhile, all the best to all of you. Have a fabulous weekend.